Welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay.
And welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. My name is host Mike Jokum. Jess and Matt joining me for what has been a very hectic week in the silly season world. It'll be nice to get back to racing this week. Plenty to talk about. Fernando Alonso, Scott Dixon, Tony Stewart, Connor Daly, Sage Karam, and the list goes on for about another 2 miles. So we'll start with Fernando Alonso. There are strong rumors coming out now that he will be in a McLaren / Harding / Andretti sort of entry. And has a test coming up at Barber Motorsports Park in early September. So I'll turn it over to you guys for your initial reaction on Alonso week or Fred week, Fred watch week, and get your thoughts, and we'll take the episode from there.
Yeah, I don't know. Fred watch is probably the best thing to ever happen to social media. It was fun to follow, fun to watch. I know there were some people who stayed up all night the day before his, or like the night of his announcement / the morning of, just to see if he did it European time. I woke up in a frenzy in the morning, refreshing my phone, seeing if something happened. Nothing did until about, I don't know, noonish. But it was just exhilarating to kind of see what was going to happen and what he was going to announce. And then just, it was just a retirement from Formula One, but the writing was kind of on the wall that it was going to happen. So that was good news for us IndyCar fans. And then just seeing the subsequent news come out about what might actually happen next year for him in IndyCar. What are your thoughts about it, Jess?
Well, you both know I'm extremely excited that, we've taken the next step in the right direction for him coming over. I do want to say that I have an anonymous source who did all but confirm that the test is going to be happening at Barber. Andretti had some equipment put together for the test for a reevaluation, is what they're calling it, for an undisclosed driver in the 28 car. Well, Ryan Henry should be pretty good. So I think that we know who is testing that car at Barber. Pretty excited for it. Wish I could go. Unfortunately, it's a weekday.
I may have looked up flights to see how much it costs to fly down to Alabama on a Tuesday, but it is out of my budget at this point in the calendar year. I did not stay up all night. I know a couple people who did, and I think they're insane. Like, you must feel pretty silly, especially when the only thing he said was, "I'm retiring from F1." And the video is awesome, don't get me wrong. But I do value my sleep very much so. And, listen, the news in the end is awesome. Social media this week and in the IndyCar world, for all but one of us, was a fantastic time. Jenna Fryer wasn't too pleased, but when is she ever? I guess two people, but we'll save the other guy for the pitfall. I'm pretty sure that gives it away. But I think it was a really exciting IndyCar week, especially leading up to two important races at Pocono and then Gateway as we finally end this summer break and get back to some actual racing and not just silly season talk. But it's been really exciting. So Matt, and I know there's been tons of questions surrounding how does this Honda Chevy Harding Andretti partnership work. I'll let you dive into a short explanation before we move on here, because I know we got that question about it 142 times this week.
Yeah, to try and put it as simply as possible, Michael Andretti wants to use Harding Racing to have a satellite team, and the belief is that McLaren, who was told that they're not going to get support from Honda, but as of like 2 hours ago before our episode started, may now get support from Honda. We don't know. But Michael Andretti was looking at Harding to farm out two cars. One is the potential for a McLaren car, and the other is for one of the Indy Lights drivers coming up, or maybe someone else. The likelihood is that it'll either be Colton Herta or Pato O'Ward. And then on top of that, Harding wants their own car, likely Gabby Chavez, unless something goes wrong with his deal that he has for 2019. So who knows? But the biggest question we got was, you know, Andretti is a Honda team and Harding is a Chevrolet team. Doesn't that mean like one of them is going to switch to the other engine? And the answer looks like it's going to be no, unless Honda has an issue with it. So Honda originally didn't want McLaren in any Honda cars. So the way around that was put them in a Harding car that has Chevy power. Now it may not work that way. Who actually knows at this point? But the deal does not hinge on Andretti switching engines or Harding switching engines, unless Honda has a problem with Andretti kind of bypassing the system and using Chevrolet to farm out two of their drivers. So to answer everybody's questions, no, it's not a foregone conclusion that they will have to switch engines, either Harding or Andretti Autosport, but at this end of the day, they call it silly season for a reason. So we'll just have to keep watching the news.
Yeah, I feel like every time that we think it's going to be, you know, a quiet week or things aren't going to get crazy, pretty much since this podcast started, it's just been nonstop insanity, not even silly season. I think we can call it insanity season. It's just, you know, hasn't stopped. Moving on, I guess that's it with McLaren and Alonso, unless I'm missing anything.
We did have one fan question pertaining to that, so I'll put Jess on the spot. It's, of course, from our buddy George, who's at ButtsIsNuts4 on social media. And so if Alonso goes to McLaren, Harding, Andretti, and if Gabby Chavez stays with Harding, our buddy George wants to know what we think will happen with Connor Daly or Zachary Clement-DeMello, who are both angled for potentially finishing out the season with Harding for the rest of the year.
I think that it'll be Daly only because they've had good success with him, getting information with him. And as far as that goes, I could really see the potential for a third car next year. And it could be Daly in it. I mean, they've already shown that they're willing to kind of play with the contract that Gabby has. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. But I definitely think Connor is probably a better decision to finish out the season just to get that kind of information on how the car is working and see if they can gain some positions from it.
What about 2019? What do you think? Do you think Daly or Clement-DeMello have a shot next year?
I definitely said yes to that. I think that Daly would be possibly having a shot next year.
What about you, Mike?
Yeah, I agree. I think Daly will finish out the year this year. Next year, I don't know if Pato can bring some, he has that Visit Mexico sponsorship on the side of his Indy Lights car now. If they step up to the plate a little bit more, I can easily see Harding, who, you know, looks like they need a little bit of money right now, taking on Pato, who's not a bad driver, you know, despite the money he'd be bringing. So I think, you know, Pato or Herta, whoever wins Indy Lights is definitely a viable option for that, you know, potential third car.
Yeah, I agree. And it sounds like, Pato and Colton, I don't think, are not coming to IndyCar next year one way or the other. It does sound like Pato's got the sponsorship support, and if he gets the extra $1 million, it doesn't hurt, plus $1 million of Leader Circle money. And then, you know, Colton, if he's got the Steinbrenner money, it's going to end up somewhere. So I think it's good news, and then that means just a huge Well, a potential huge increase in car count next year. We could see up to 26 to 27 full-time cars, which is awesome. And then if some of these rumored part-time drivers happen for maybe like the Indy 500, we could see 36 to 40-ish cars. So that is going to be pretty epic to watch and pretty cool to watch or follow along for the rest of silly season.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure from here on out, we should assume that every week in the off season is going to be some level of insanity, just because there's so much at stake this off season, more so than any other, or at least, you know, in recent memory, in terms of open spots or potential, you know, Indy 500 rides, et cetera, et cetera. Next on our list, we can just gloss over this part real quick. Scott Dixon staying with Chip Ganassi, which I'm not really all that surprised about. Although I think I did predict he would leave for McLaren and take the money when we had Christian on a couple weeks ago. So I am willing to admit I was wrong on this one.
How about the double Indy Lights entries? Has that happened yet?
Don't know what you're talking about. Definitely never said that. Gonna go back and edit that out of the episode right now. But more interesting with Ganassi, I guess, you know, we'll note that Dixon's contract, at first I said 1 year, then they said 3 year, and then I think it was today on Marshall Pruitt's podcast, or Rob Miller was one of those guys. Matt, correct me if I'm wrong there, but that the contract was 1 year with a driver option after the next 2 years. So hypothetically, we could be having the Scott Dixon discussion again this time next year. And I'm sure we will be.
Yeah. And, you know, if Alonso and McLaren go out there and win seven races, I think Ganassi can pretty much kiss Dixon goodbye. Or if something happens with Penske again. But I think it was strategically well done by Dixon, because he doesn't know if this whole McLaren thing is going to happen. But if it does happen, he gives himself the window to jump right back into it next year. So I think it was really well played by him and his whole management team for not only securing a good ride for him next year, but having that out in case McLaren does end up being the next greatest thing.
So speaking of Ganassi, you know, get your guys' thoughts on this. There definitely was not a ringing endorsement of Ed Jones this week when Chip said that, you know, they were evaluating some options for the number 10 car. Scott Dixon saying exciting personnel are coming to Ganassi in 2019, you know, whatever that means. But, you know, when Chip was talking about the number 10 car, I don't even think Ed's name came up. And I know he's hit a little bit of a rough patch lately, but do you guys think that means the number 10 seat is definitely up for grabs next year, or do you think Ed Jones still has a chance to keep his seat for 2019?
I think he has a chance to keep his seat, but I don't necessarily know that he will, because, you know how Chip is. He likes winners. And unfortunately, as well as Ed has done, he hasn't produced that win yet. I personally think it would be kind of a disservice to him if Chip does drop him. I think that he has a lot of potential, but we'll see. You know how Chip is. He does like those winners.
Always loves those winners. Yeah, and to add on to that, and the Pruitt podcast, they also didn't really give endorsement a ringing endorsement as far as Chip signing him. They sung Ed's praises as far as him as a driver, and I would agree. I think he definitely can end up being a really good driver. I think he would just need one more year at Ganassi, but this whole winner mentality that Jess is speaking about, Chip's not going to be afraid to axe him. And to kind of add on to that, it was really surprising to hear that basically Ed Jones was Chip Ganassi's fourth option for that car. Bourdais said no because he's at Coyne, and then Rosenquist had Formula E commitments, and then Brendan Hartley got poached to Toro Rosso again for this year at Formula One. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're the fourth option, not really great job security unless you really blow their socks off, and he hasn't, unfortunately. So he's got four races to change their minds. And, you know, he wasn't too sparkling at Texas. He wasn't too sparkling at Iowa. Wasn't too sparkling at Indy. Was very sparkling at Phoenix. But he's going to really need a good weekend and a good rest of the season.
Yeah, I don't think you know, Toronto and Mid-Ohio were great showings either in more recent history. But yeah, obviously, you know, since we had Ed on and we have educated him to what a pinata is, I hope he comes back so we can ask him that question again next year. So quick, I don't even, what topic do we want to get to next year?
Oh, I know Jess wants to talk about smoke. Right, Jess?
Yay! I am so excited for even the potential for this to happen. I've already said it. I've said it on social media. I've said it to everybody who knows me. If a deal comes together for smoke, and he's clearly looking for something to kind of come together, I will blow all of my vacation and all of my money to go to Indianapolis. So I cannot wait. Just the potential to see him in that race again is like beyond exciting for me.
For those who don't know at home, Smoke is Tony Stewart. And so, yeah, I don't know. Apparently Roger Penske has been wanting him forever, which I don't know. Like, you got guys like Alexander Rossi, Robert Wickens, or even the more recent memory of really good drivers like, I don't know, what's that one American's name? Scott Dixon. I think that's Mike, if anybody didn't listen a couple weeks ago. And I don't know. I think when Jess said it, well, I don't know, like what, 2-3 months ago, I laughed. I thought.
Me too.
I thought Jess was.
Drinking a little too much.
I don't know. What are we allowed to say? I guess iTunes bans us for something. I don't know. Insert banned substance here. I think Jess was on something. When she said that, I thought she was crazy. But then, yeah, you know, here he comes. So I guess if he can drop 40 pounds, I think it's definitely a viable option. It's just a matter of – he also said that he didn't want to be a sideshow, which was definitely a shot at our favorite person, Danica Patrick. So we'll see if it actually happens.
Yeah, I like that he said, I don't want to be a sideshow like Danica. I mean, that was awesome. That is, you know, prototypical Tony Stewart right there. And like you said, the man definitely needs to lose some weight. But, you know, the Indy 500 can motivate people to do crazy things. And I think it's definitely possible. It's kind of cool to me to see Roger Penske come out and say that, you know, the one driver that got away Penske was younger, he wants to see a race for him before, you know, Roger Penske gets too old. So I think it'd be pretty cool. I think it would be awesome to see Tony Stewart race with any team. I think it'd be a good fit maybe for a third car for Ed Carpenter and Team America. That would be an awesome Team America. But that's just my thoughts.
Did you see that he wanted to do a track before he got to Indy? So I can't wait for him to like warm up at St. Petersburg or something and try to translate that data into running at the high speeds of Indy. I don't know. I think he would need to do like a private test somewhere, if anything.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure, you know, come Indy practice next year, if this hypothetical dream we're talking about right now comes to fruition, he will be running the most practice laps out of anybody. And hopefully he is already hitting the gym to get in a little bit of shape. I know it's just a little bit easier to drive those stock cars around.
Burn.
Yeah. I guess we can't go a week without making fun of them or talking about Danica. A little bit, speaking of Connor Daly, you know, at first, I think it was Monday, racer.com confirmed Clayman DeMello for the next two races, and then unconfirmed it and said Connor Daly will be at Pocono, and then Clayman DeMello will be at Gateway and then Portland, which leads to the last race of the year. I know Jess and I both kind of said it would be Connor Daly. I still think an Indy Lights guy might sneak in there at the end of the year. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on Daly at Pocono over anybody else, but if not, we can move on to other topics before we get to our Pocono preview. Nobody? All right. Let's bring up the news from today. I think it was in the Marshall Pruitt podcast. Everybody's favorite Italian-American, Santino Ferrucci, is trying to get the third coin car at the end of the year. And we got a lot of very strongly worded tweets, not directed at us, but just directed at Santino. I don't know. I'll turn it over to you guys first, Jess or Matt. Do you think it's a good idea for Santino, a good idea for Dale Coyne? Thoughts?
I'll let Jess go first.
I think he is going to be the biggest villain that IndyCar has seen in a while. I don't necessarily think that he's made any friends, so I think it would be an interesting situation. Do I think that it's like set in stone, absolutely going to happen? Not yet, but I think it could. I mean, we all know he brings money to the table, so I don't know, but I don't think that a lot of people will be very happy if it does happen.
Well, like Jess said, to kind of echo that, you know, I don't want to see Santino Ferrucci, the person, succeed. I don't think anybody else does either. But we can't ignore the fact that in today's racing world, if you have money, you're going places. And Ferrucci and his family has the money to purchase rides. And in that sense, a guy like Dale Coyne or maybe a guy like Ricardo Juncos, they might not say no. It's just kind of the world we live in. I mean, even if his character has some, we'll call them very gaping holes in his character. even if that's the case, he still could end up with a ride. And to add on to what Jess said, you know, I guess we might be in the minority saying it might be good for IndyCar to have a Santino Ferrucci, a guy that people can, you know, band together and say, this guy sucks, we hate him. Because we don't have one of those right now. We don't have a driver in IndyCar where everybody universally hates one driver. We haven't had that in God knows how long.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. I think like Schechter, though. Schechter had his cult following of fans. Paul Tracy is probably it. I don't know. Has there really been one driver in the recent memory where everybody's like, I don't know, like Mario Marias, but he didn't wreck too, like, I don't know. He was an idiot, I guess. But EJ Visa was another one where people just like, this guy's a joke. But it was,
yeah,
really,
but I don't think I would make him a villain.
Right. He's not a villain. He's just a guy who gets in the way and wrecks a lot, but he wasn't like a villain per se.
Yeah.
There's probably got to be Tracy, you think.
Yeah. So it's definitely been a while. And, you know, I do agree. I don't think it would be bad for, you know, the villain aspect. And honestly, he's a dumb young kid. I'm sure we all said really dumb things when we were 20. I might not have blamed it on my Italian heritage or anything like that, but, you know, I'm sure I said plenty of dumb things back then too. And I don't care if he gets a third car or not. He's got the money. So if he's got the money, that's fine. Dale Coyne could use the money. Harding could use the money. Or like Matt mentioned, Juncos. And he'll provide some intrigue to the end of the race. Can you imagine him having some sort of battle with a championship contender the last race of the year? People are going to lose their minds, which would be kind of awesome. I'm sure Twitter would malfunction because it would just start breaking down. Moving on, before we continue our topics, Jess, do you want to jump in with your Stump the Host?
Absolutely. Let me pull up. I took a picture of it, so I knew I wouldn't phrase it incorrectly because I was a little worried I would forget.
What decade are we in?
Let me just. It depends on how you look at the question, honestly. Oh, no. But it could be like this year.
but it could be 1911.
So it just depends on what you are, how you want to look at the question. But it is going to be Pocono related. So yay. I'm not going to ask you about the first Indy 500 or anything.
Is it which Italian American?
Okay, so No. So Pocono is called the Tricky Triangle. Obviously, everybody knows that. But can you guys tell me the three tracks that have influenced turns 1, 2, and 3 at Pocono and the degrees of banking that are in those turns?
Oh, no.
Yes. I'm going to say...
What?
Listen, Pocono is my home track. I've read plenty about this.
You don't know what country Scott
Dixon. Don't you be Googling, by the way.
Degrees of Pocono?
You guys can see my video screen right now. My hands are away from the keyboard. Turn one is Indy at 14 degrees banking. Turn two
14
is...
14 degrees is correct, but Indy is not.
Turn three is Trenton, right?
No.
Okay, maybe I don't know this. I thought one of the turns was Trenton.
You have two of the tracks, but you're not matching them with the correct turns.
And turn two banking is 10%, right?
10 degrees.
10 degrees. Close. Sorry. 8 degrees.
No.
Warmer or colder?
If I say, I'm going to give the answer away.
9 or 11.
The first guess, 9.
All right. So we've got banking.
We've got two of the degrees of banking. So what's turn three's banking?
6.
Yes. Okay. Now, turn one is modeled after what track?
I'm going to go with Trenton.
Yes.
Turn two. Indy.
Yes.
Turn three, Milwaukee.
Yep. There you go.
Champion.
And that came straight from the IndyCar, Verizon IndyCar app.
Well, I was completely worthless that time.
Here, Matt, I'll give you an easy Pocono one that I just saw Arnie from IndyCar PR post on Facebook or Twitter. Two drivers have finished in the top 5 of every Pocono race since Pocono has come back in 2013. Can you name them? This should be pretty easy. Oh, Matt is having a rough week.
Dixon?
Dixon is one.
Power.
Power is two.
I had to think about it. I didn't want to say something stupid. I was thinking my first guess was Newgarden. I'm like, wait a second. His first 2 years were kind of rough. And then it wasn't Pagano because he wrecked 1 year. So I just had to do some quick math. And Hunter Ray got wrecked by Sato that first year really badly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I guess we can hop into our Pocono preview or before we continue on the silly season discussion. Great question there, Jess. I'm happy I figured it out after bumbling through the first part of it. I bumfully went through the first part of that. So Pocono, you know, they added the winglets to the front wings to make it a little bit easier for guys to drive closer together. Unfortunately, we didn't see any of that in the test last week. It was mainly just the rookie drivers getting out there and going on, 6 to 8 lap runs at the most. The one thing I did notice from standing there is guys were definitely having to let off the throttle in turn three. And even Pietro Fittipaldi was having some trouble back in turn two, but you could tell Robert Wickens looked like a beast out there. And I think he was running lap times of 214 miles an hour, which is pretty close to race pace, if I'm not mistaken. But what do you guys think we're going to see in Pocono? The weather looks like it's going to be beautiful. It's the first super speedway this year where the track isn't going to be melting if you walk on it. I think that's going to bode great for the race, but I'll turn it over to you guys before I give my opinion.
I think we are going to have one heck of a race. I mean, Pocono always produces incredible racing, so I think it can only be good things. You know, even with the new wing, it's not the new wing glitz that they've added. I think it can only be better. You know, I mean, they are constantly working on making racing better for the fans and you know, and Jay Fry we trust.
Yay, Jay Fry. Yeah, Jay Fry. I love Jay Fry.
Very good point.
Still waiting for that off-season whiskey with Jay Fry. yeah, I hope we get more Iowa and Texas and less Indy and Phoenix. If there was one good thing about the Aero Kits is that the Aero Kits of the old put on heck of a races at Fontana, Texas, Indy, and Pocono. And it just seems like, you know, Texas was actually, I guess, in the eye of the viewer. I think us three on here really loved it. So I think even Pocono's degrees of banking, Mike's an expert on, and the length of the straightaways, I think it will be a good show. And it's good to see that they were progressive in adding those wing flaps or whatever we decided to call them. So, yeah, and as far as who to kind of go for and as far as fantasy goes, it's surprising to note that Ed Carpenter has only finished 9th as his best career finish. Hinch doesn't have a great record there. Ray Hall doesn't have a great record there. So there's some guys you may want to kind of do some digging on some past performances. But your Penske guys will be solid. Dixon will be solid. If you want to trust Mike, Wickens apparently might be a good pick. But Pocono is also one of those races where a lot of random stuff can happen. So it might not be too bad of a week to go conservative, but it's up to how gutsy you're feeling.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, the different banking in different corners makes it tough to really get a solid setup on your car. But I thought Wickens looked very impressive in the test. Obviously, there were no other cars around while I was out there. Zach Beach looked pretty good, too. Pietro Fittipaldi, I probably wouldn't pick him in fantasy. Has his first IndyCar Super Speedway, being Pocono, is definitely a tough one to dip your feet into, especially, you know, coming off a long layoff that he's had. And I don't remember who else raced. Laced and Kanaan practiced a little bit both last week, and nothing stuck out about them. So
they didn't wreck.
They didn't wreck. Nobody wrecked in you know, the 5 or 6 hours of on-track activity last week. But then again, I didn't stay until the very end. I'm going to pick Wickens as he's going to get his first career win this week. I'm just going to throw that out there. And if I'm wrong, well, I'm wrong.
I'll go with, you know what? Last time we did this prediction nonsense, I looked like a fool because Jess said Piggott and I laughed at her. You know what? I'm going to go with Piggott. Spencer Piggott is winning this weekend. And I don't want to hear anything of it.
Oh, man. Yeah, that was kind of a shot in the dark, but, man, I was good on that one, wasn't I?
That was impressive.
Let's see. Who am I going to pick? I mean, I hate to pick the easy one, but I feel like Scott Dixon's going to come in and show that, you know, he really wants this title, and I think he's going to take this win.
You know, it was interesting. I think Will Power said the other day or earlier today that, you know, each of these championship contenders has had to undergo some form of adversity in the last 4 to 5 races, and Scott Dixon hasn't faced his adversity yet. So will it be time for Dixon to, you know, get something unlucky? Obviously, we can't predict that, but, and it's never a bad pick to bet against or to bet for Scott Dixon at Pocono, considering he's finished top 5 in every single time. I think he won the first year in 2013 or 2014, I forget.
13, but real quick follow-up. Dark horse, yeah. Everybody. Pick a dark horse.
Dark horse, Zach Beach.
That's what I was going to say.
Oh.
I just beat you
Connor
to it.
Daly.
Connor Daly.
Connor Daly.
I'll say, I don't know. Sato got the pole last year. That's not exactly a dark horse. Given how, maybe not. You know what? I'm going to say Fittipaldi. And I'm going to go with the double screw it on my picks this week. And I'm going to say Pietro Fittipaldi is going to finish not in the bottom five. Does that make him a dark horse?
No. No.
All right, realistically, I'll say like maybe like seventh or eighth. I'll say Pietro sneaks into the top 10.
Okay. All right. That's fair.
Okay.
All right. Back to silly season. Now that we've got the silly racing stuff out of the way with it, we've seemed to have forgotten about in the last 2 weeks. Matt, where do we want to go next?
Well, I think we got to throw in a quick fact here about the racing world is that if anybody was wondering at home, Danica Patrick really hates popsicles. So if you ever see her at a track, you want to bring her a box of popsicles, she might throw them back in your face. So that is...
I just really want to know where you get all of your Danica info.
You know what? That is confidential information that I'm not sharing because it's not from ESPNW. So you know what? It's something I'm going to keep
posting. It's Shelly from Jenna Fryer, isn't it?
No.
It's from Jenna Fryer.
No, because then I'll just get all their workout routines and... how Danica Patrick would beat Fernando Alonso on a road course in an F1 car.
For sure.
Right. I think the next one we could – well, quick mention today, the news came out that Michael Andretti has decided to re-sign Marco Andretti, which is the most breaking news of the offseason, to a multi-year, quote-unquote, extension with US Concrete, which is that gray and white car that he's been running a lot this year. We'll be on the car for 7 races next season. And then the article went on to say from Andretti Autosport that definitely Veach, Hunter Ray, and Rossi will be back with the team next year. Kind of tagging along with that, the whole Andretti farming out guys to Harding, Group 1001, which is Zach Veach's sponsor, definitely said that they would not be allowing Michael Andretti to farm out Zach Veach to that car. They are paying good money for Veach to be in that Andretti Autosport car, so Veach is not going anywhere despite what some of the rumors going around are stating. And then maybe we can get your guys' opinions on Rahal Letterman. Lanigan Racing One is to go to 3 cars next year, and they are going to be hopefully testing Colin Braun in the offseason. They said that may be too late to get him into a race this season. And also Formula One former Sauber driver Felipe Nasr, who I believe is in IMSA now, is also being under serious consideration for a seat. What do you guys think? We've talked a little bit about Colin Braun. I don't know if you guys know a whole lot about Felipe Nasr, but what are your guys' thoughts on the whole Rahal situation or the whole Zach Veach not going anywhere?
So I have no problem with Group 1001 saying to Andretti, listen, we want him in a quote-unquote Andretti car next year. They're probably paying big bucks for a 3-year contract for Zach Veach. So I have no problem with that. It's, you know, it's not a huge deal either way, but personally, that's fine. I don't see any big issue with that. I don't know a ton about Colin Braun other than everybody seems pretty high on him. And yes, you are correct. Nasr is in IMSA this year and has a win, I believe, if I'm looking at it. And he did a stock car race in Brazil this year. I know his results in Formula One weren't particularly outstanding, but then again, what do you expect when you're on Team Sauber? He had, you know, a good GP2 season back in 2014. He had a good British F3 championship in 2011 with Carlin. So I don't think it's a bad, you know, to give him a test and see how he does. But I think I would like to see Colin Braun more than Nasr, and that's only because I've heard many more people talk highly of of Braun over the last couple weeks. Jess?
So I don't really necessarily disagree exactly, but I feel like they need to be put in cars for tests before we're like, oh, you know, these are our two candidates. Well, what if neither one of them work out? There are a lot of guys out there who have a lot of talent and should be considered. And I think, you know, making a short list before you put any of them in the seat to test them is maybe a little bit of shooting yourself in the foot. Not that I'm saying they're not good, so please don't take it that way and attack me on social media later. I don't mean that at all, but I just mean I think that they need to weigh their options a little bit more and do some testing before they're like, yeah, these are the people we want to kind of go with. And then as far as Zach Veach staying with Andretti, yeah, I 100% agree. If you're paying that kind of money and you had a deal for him to be in an Andretti proper car, then he better stay in that Andretti proper car, or I would be wanting to take my money elsewhere also. So I will agree with that one. And like I said, I don't really disagree with Ray Hall Letterman. I just think they should get some testing under their belts and see who's out there and who's available when things start to shake down with the silly season.
I just hope this whole, like, you know, as impressive as Robert Wickens has been this year, I hope it's not a fad or a trend or teams trying to stretch going out and getting guys who are 29 to 30 years old just because Robert Wickens had a really good season. Because I don't know, I like watching the young blood come into the series, because usually, and I guess you could kind of see what Wickens is here, and Wickens, don't get me wrong, is one of the fastest guys out there, but I don't think he has that aggressiveness that you would see from a 19 to 20 year old who doesn't have any fear and can make a boneheaded decision here or there. I don't think Wickens has really put a wheel wrong all year. I'm trying to think. I don't think he crashed at Indy practice, but that's just practice. I think he could have blocked here or there a little more. St. Petersburg or Toronto are two good examples. And
again,
to him just being a quote unquote wily veteran already and knowing when to push and when to kind of, you know, pack it in and just go for the results. So I like the young drivers. I always think they inject a little bit of enthusiasm and a little bit of aggressiveness into the series. And then as their careers develop, they usually tend to mellow out. So, but at the end of the day, I would also stick with Colin Braun, just because when you get a glowing report from Bobby Rahal, usually is a good opinion to have in your pocket. So I'll stick with that and say that it would be nice to see Braun for a couple races next year.
Yeah, speaking of switching back to NASA real quick, I didn't realize he was only 25 years old. I feel like he's been around much longer than that. So if they ended up that route, I guess it would be you know, splitting the difference between a young 19-year-old and a Wickens, just, you know, 28 or 29 or so. But moving on from that, let's see here, what's next? So I guess we can talk a little schedule discussion here. So Texas Motor Speedway, I think Mark Miles came out and said this, that they are not going to be given geographical exclusivity for any future contract, whether it be next year or going forward. And, you know, listen, if we need to start in Mark Miles, we're thankful for hashtag.
It's go Mark Miles.
Go Mark Miles. Okay. That's much more eloquently put than whatever I just said. You know, great job there. I think that's the perfect thing to do. Whether that means Circuit of the Americas is an IndyCar race at some point in the next couple of years or not, that clause never really made a ton of sense to me in the last couple of years. So I don't know what you guys think about that, and then we'll turn it over to the other potential tracks for 2019 and on.
It makes sense if it was like a street race in a city like Hartford, Connecticut, where, you know, if you put another race in Connecticut, obviously you're not going to get a big crowd at both races. But for a state like Texas, where, you know, I think Austin is what, 4 to 5 hours from Dallas, Fort Worth.
I think so. Yeah. Like that.
I just, like, Texas is, what, the second biggest state in America. It just doesn't make any sense to have such a wide range for, you know, not having a street race in San Antonio, which has been a rumor, or if they want to go back to a random parking lot in Houston. Like, it makes no sense why they wouldn't be able to do that just because Texas and Eddie Gossage say they can't. So, yeah, definitely applauding Mark Miles on that one.
Jess?
Yep, for sure. I agree 100%. I can't. There is no reason except for Eddie Gossage just wanted to basically be in charge, for lack of a better way of putting it. But yeah, I mean, to put it in perspective, for people who haven't been to Texas, it is bigger than a lot of European countries. So it's huge. And to think that they should only have one race there is just laughable. So I'm glad they're getting rid of that. And yeah, like you guys said, whether they have another race in Texas anytime soon or not, it should be IndyCar's decision and no one else's.
Yep, agreed. And before we get to the other tracks, I don't know if you mentioned this earlier, but Pocono is confirmed back for 2019. I guess that was our first real bit of truly uncovering the news. So I'm glad to see it back. You know, I think 2017 Pocono was by far the best Pocono race. And obviously, as we mentioned, we believe it's going to be another good one this year. But speaking of other tracks, it sounds like Homestead for 2019 is officially out. Sorry, Jess.
But that's disappointing.
Now the debate is, potentially Richmond or Chicagoland. Starting next year, Chicagoland's always been one that I think us as fans and other media have kind of talked about as a pipe dream for many months, but never thought it was really a possibility. And then all of a sudden this week it popped up as a possibility, but that's what you get in 2018 with IndyCar news. I don't know if you guys have a preference for either of those, and then we'll get to the Brazil 2020 news after that.
Richmond. Go ahead, Jess.
Chicago.
Yeah, I'm going as my selfishly, I would say Richmond because I don't have to fly there. But Chicago produced some really great finishes. Some of the closest finishes in IndyCar history. But I think either if the choices are between just ovals in this little discussion, I'm happy either way, as long as we can add another oval or keep the oval count the same, I think is pretty important. Although I know the guy who is in charge of IndyCar scheduling, his name is escaping me, Mr. Sparks, Steve Sparks, maybe?
Is it Starks with a T?
Starks, Sparks, I know I read the article this morning. I'm sorry, I'm getting your name wrong, sir. but he said, you know, there's no quota on ovals versus street races versus road races, but we like to keep the diversity, and that to me is the perfect way of putting it. If we can keep the oval count the same and, you know, maybe make it 666 and we have a clean 18 races, would be ideal. But yeah, I think they're on the right path. And as we saw, we posted on our social media yesterday. Matt can speak to it more because I can't find the link.
Talking about Rio?
Rio 2020. I'll turn it over to you for this one.
Well, it's definitely not Sao Paulo, like I tweeted. So I do apologize for that error. Because it did say, I know, I'm sorry. it did say it was going to be at the Sambadromo, which I thought just assumed it meant Sao Paulo because that's exactly where it was held. But it turns out that's a city-by-city thing in Brazil, so it's not, the Sambadromo isn't at one place. It's kind of at a lot of locations. Each city kind of has their own. And so the Rio de Janeiro Board of Tourism or something thereabouts is wanting to host an IndyCar race in 2020, which is excellent if you ask me. I don't think we should have ever left Sao Paulo just because that track was excellent, but then also the sheer circus that followed those races. If you kind of do the math, you know, we got Canaan laced, Pietro Fittipaldi potentially for the next couple of years if Felipe Nasr ends up coming. I think that's – and even like a Santi Urrutia, you know, his home country is not too far away. I know there would be some diehard fans that would travel to Brazil to watch him race. I mean, there's fans that travel to America to watch him race. He's your boy. Don't give a – Mike loves Santino – or not Santino, Santi. So he loves Santino and Santi, I guess. But, yeah, I think if they went back to Brazil, that would be excellent in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. Jess, any thoughts on Brazil?
I'll probably have to get my passport re-upped because I definitely would want to go for sure. I mean, how awesome would it be to go down there? We shouldn't have left in the first place. It's unfortunate that did happen, and it would be so nice to see him go back and not just there, Mexico City that's been talked about several times. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens in the next couple of years, see if they can get some more, we'll call them diverse tracks added to the schedule.
And lest we not forget, I think it was 2014. There was going to be a race at the circuit Nelson Piquet, maybe? Or was it the Emerson Fittipaldi? One of those. It was named after a famous Brazilian driver that they were going to race, and all of a sudden, like, they were still doing construction, like, 2 months before the race was going to happen. And then the funding ran out, and the construction wasn't finished, and then it just looked like a really bad look for IndyCar. So hopefully if they do it this time, they do it right.
Yeah, very well said. That was a very confusing situation. I think that's it on the track front. Belle Isle is officially back for 3 years with an option for two more after that, if I'm not mistaken. So sorry to all the, 20 or 25 protesters that protest every week at Belle Isle, but you lose. And sad to see Toyota drop out as sponsoring the race at Long Beach, but considering Toyota hasn't been in IndyCar in, 10 plus years, I'm not surprised. And that race draws so well every year in attendance. And, this year was a very good race. I can't imagine it being very hard to find a replacement title sponsor for that race.
Never made sense to me. It must have been some sort of revenue sharing thing. But yeah, when Toyota dropped out after the 05 IRL season, it didn't make a whole lot of sense, I guess, when the event came to the IRL in 2008. I guess it didn't make any sense with them in Champ Car either, because that was just a Ford-only season or Ford-only series for the last couple of seasons. So, Jess, have you ever been to Long Beach?
I have not. That's one track I've not been to, and I definitely need to get out there.
Like, Mike, you have, right?
No, I have not, and I would love to. That is on my bucket list of tracks to get to, hopefully, next year.
Nor have I, if you can't tell by my reaction. I have not been there.
I was pretty surprised to hear today that Simon Pagenaud said, or some a driver told Robin Miller that Simon Pagenaud told him, hopefully I got that wording correct, that Penske has not had any discussions with him concerning 2019 yet. I was a little surprised by that. I'm not super surprised. There's plenty of time. The off season is give or take a couple weeks, 6 months. So there's plenty of time, but surprised they haven't at least started discussions yet. What do you guys think?
Given the source of some driver told somebody, and it's their cousin's brother, sister's uncle said, I'm going to take it with a grain of salt. I know Robin gets a lot of inside information, but this seems to be a little bit of a stretch. Like I said, just given the vagueness of the source, I guess I'll say, I mean, maybe they haven't got into like real discussions yet, but it would be shocking to me if Penske hasn't at least, started talking to him about what his plans are, what their plans are, what the plans are as a team, because yeah, even though there's still the off season, it's for somebody like him, it's time to kind of start looking at putting something on paper.
Yeah, and if anybody doesn't follow us on social media, we're at Pit Lane Parlay, all one word, that's P-A-R-L-E-Y. If anybody's wondering where we get some of our information from on social media, now that Jess says brothers, cousins, uncles, nephews, whoever, our main source is Mike's Beekeeper. So if anybody needs to track down a source, Mike's Beekeeper is our go-to person for some of our insider knowledge. So we appreciate the follows and the continued social media interactions on there. We've gotten a lot of buzz this week, so we really appreciate that, and we really appreciate you guys coming and taking some time to listen to us.
So one last thing here, I think, and we can save some of this other stuff for an episode that isn't jam-packed with a ton of news, is Max Chilton's dad was ousted or left this as CEO of Gallagher company. Will that affect Max Chilton in 2019? I don't see how it doesn't. I don't know what the breakdown of funding there is, but considering his car is ran that Gallagher livery exclusively for the last 3 years now, I'm sure it could have a major impact on Max Chilton. I'm sure by next year, that second Carlin seat will be pretty coveted, whether it be an Indy Lights guy or somebody else who's going to pop up out of nowhere into the discussion at some point. Who knows? But certainly, an interesting thing to keep an eye on at the end of the year. And I guess one other thing that kind of stuck out, I think Matt tweeted this today, is that McLaren is asking, where is my note here? RHR as the second Harding/McLaren car, they have asked permission if that's possible. I'm pretty much going to say that's not possible, since Michael Andretti today said, our four drivers this year are our four drivers next year, in terms of strictly Andretti Racing. So I'm going to say sorry, McLaren, but if Alonso goes out and wins a bunch of races, like Matt said, that second seat in 2020 might be much more coveted. Have we hit all of our bullet points, Matt?
Sounds about right. I guess on the Chilton thing, if Daddy isn't in charge anymore, does Chilton still get Daddy's company's money? Does that make sense? I don't know.
Yeah. It makes perfect sense, but I do agree. I don't think so either.
He's probably like leaving, and one of his provisions was that for the next 7 years, the company must sponsor Max Chilton, no matter the.
That would be funny, but believable. So before we get to our pitfalls of the week, again, thank you, Wildfire Radio, for their continued playing of our show Friday, 3:15 to 4:15 Eastern on wildfireradio.com. And for SoundQ Audio, remember to go to soundqaudio.com and use code PLPFAN, and you get 35% off your purchase and enter to win some Pit and Paddock passes, a Firestone hat, and whatever else I can drum up in the next week or two. And also, if you have not checked out the podcast featuring James Hinchcliffe and Alex Rossi, Ask Off Track, their social media is Ask Off Track. It's a pretty good insight into not just talking about driving, but just pop culture and whatever else they want to talk about. Last week, Alex Rossi mentioned that he thinks Tom Brady would be a good actor if somebody were to play Alex Rossi in a movie. I think that is the pitfall of 2018 for me right there. but I will save that for when I hopefully bump into him this weekend. And they've had some pretty cool guests on there. John Green, Pat McAfee, Colts punter Tony Stewart was on there, comedian Jeff Ross. And it is exclusive to the app CastBox, where you can find us featured in the sports and recreation section. So check it out, but make sure to continue to check us out too. And for all your IndyCar news and interviews, but they've got a pretty funny show, and they don't delve too much into the racing world. And their producer, Tim, takes a beating from both James and Rossi every week. They really give it to him. So it's pretty funny to listen to. Moving on with that, it is time for the pitfalls. And I think I'm going to put Matt on the spot for the first pitfall this week.
Well, mine is going back. So I was kind of saving this up from last week because the Brian France one kind of took the cake. But mine is actually kind of stemming back from a week or two ago. And it's actually going to be for Formula One team Red Bull. And so hear me out here. I think their team is in some serious trouble. I think they got Max Verstappen, who's their golden boy, who they promoted faster than any driver I've ever seen promoted. And then now it's looking pretty certain that Pierre Gasly is going to be in that second car next year. And beyond that, they don't have a whole lot. And what I mean by that is Carlos Sainz was basically loaned by Red Bull / Toro Rosso to Renault. And so basically he was still kind of a Red Bull driver there. If you ever saw his helmet and were confused why Red Bull was still on the side of his helmet when he was driving for Renault, that's why. And then so Sainz is now off to McLaren. So it looks like his Red Bull affiliation is over. And that kind of signals that Gasly's going to Red Bull. Beyond that, right now at Toro Rosso, they have Brendan Hartley, who hasn't had a good year, whether it's his fault or not. The results aren't good when you compare him to Gasly's. And then after that, they have absolutely nothing in their junior program right now. They have Neri Fukuzumi, who's in the F2 series right now, who hasn't done anything this year. You've got a couple other – you got a Formula 3 driver who's won one championship. You got an American who I've never heard of, Neil Verhagen, who hasn't won anything. You got Jack Doohan, who hasn't won anything. You got a couple other guys who haven't won anything, and two of them are actually in karting right now. You know, that seems like Toro Rosso, who feeds into Red Bull, have always had a couple good drivers, Sebastian Vettel, Sebastian Buemi, Pierre Gasly. I mean, even Danny Kvyat had his moments. They went out and got Sebastian Bourdais in the 08 and 09 season, and it's almost like they're going to have to do something like that now because they have absolutely nothing in the pipeline right now. And I wonder if some of it had to do with the rapid promotion of Max Verstappen and maybe losing their credibility a little bit. I don't know if you guys have thoughts on it, but I think push comes to shove. If Max ever left the team, they would have zero options for him unless they went with Mr. or Mrs. Outside Hire, which is something they notoriously don't do.
Yeah, that's a good point. Looking at their list of reserves is pretty bad, to put it lightly. None of them look all that impressive.
Oh, and Ricardo left. I forgot to mention that. That's kind of what prefaced all this, too, is Ricardo going to Renault, which is not a good look for them either.
Yeah, it's definitely not a good look, considering he'll probably take a step back for at least next year. Not to say Renault won't rebound in the long term, but he's definitely going to take a step back for at least a year. And just to say, listen, I want to get out of Red Bull is pretty damning. Jess, any thoughts, or you can take the next pitfall?
I think that they have dug themselves into a hole and they're struggling right now to see the light. So, I think they've got a lot of work cut out for them. So we'll see. I mean, let's give it a season and see what happens. But I think that not maybe necessarily this off season, but next off season could go really wrong for them if they don't do a lot of work. And then my pitfall is somebody that we've pitfalled before. I bet you guys can guess who it is. It's a girl, and her name may or may not be Jenna Fryer.
I know.
I don't even know. I'm kind of in shock by this statement because it's just so mind-boggling that she can be so close-minded to me. And not necessarily against, like this person specifically, but just this idea that she has. So she tweeted, if I was the current IndyCar driver, I would be a little annoyed to be so overlooked by the hope Alo gets to the series. So Fernando, of course. The current drivers are pretty good, yo. So all she does is usually tear down IndyCar. Now she's saying that they're pretty good. She tore down Alonso, and now she's, you know, like, kind of like, oh yeah, he's getting a lot of attention. Maybe I should pay attention to him too, kind of thing. As far as that goes, she pretty much immediately got shot down very quickly from some of her more, we'll call them peers. Jeff Gluck, I think, was the first one who responded to her and said, wouldn't they be happy somebody could potentially bring more attention to their series? Then more people would know how good they are. And I wholeheartedly agree with him. I mean, who doesn't want more eyes on the series? That's the whole point. And also Dale Earnhardt Jr. Says, it reminds me of when Juan Pablo Montoya coming to Cup. I was so freaking pumped to be able to line up with the world champ. That, in my opinion, is how all the drivers should be looking at it. Like, they are going to get to test themselves with somebody who a lot of people in the world call him one of the best drivers in the world. So why would you not want him in your series? So the fact that she thinks that they should be really annoyed is just, it's just very, very small-minded in my opinion.
Well, this is what I tweeted. So I said, hey, Jenna, let me redo this for you. If I was the current IndyCar driver, I'd be a little annoyed to be so overlooked by the hope Danica goes to the series. The current drivers are pretty good, yo. Because that's what we got from 2005 to like 2010-ish. You'd be watching Dan Weldon and Scott Dixon battle for the lead, but then we'd have to pan back to 13th place to watch how Danica Patrick was three laps down, and it was really aggravating. And so I just don't like Jenna Fryer. And if anybody didn't follow us on social media 2 or 3 months ago, Mike and I tweeted the same thing about her being salty about, I don't even remember what, but she chose to take it out on me and block me, and Mike got off pretty much scot-free.
So. I'm still not blocked.
So
I will never forget when her child came at me on Twitter because I said, who cares what a 13-year-old thinks? Which was in reference to her 13-year-old daughter about the whole Alonso situation. And somehow her daughter found the tweet and then went after me. And needless to say, I wasn't very pleasant to her. I wasn't outrightly mean, but I wasn't very pleasant because she kind of proved my point. I really don't care what your opinion is.
Yeah, I mean, Come on, Jenna. When you have Dale Earnhardt Jr. coming out and being like, you're crazy. I mean, that's pretty much what he said. You know, Dale Earnhardt Jr. said, you're crazy. You're definitely crazy.
In a super nice way.
Yeah. Obviously, he said it a little bit nicer than that. I guess we'll leave that one at that and finish out my pitfall, which I think is a universal pitfall this week. At Mark Bland, who is some sort of political commentator on social media for some radio station. I've never heard of him before. I don't think many of us have, but he must live in the St. Louis area. His first tweet, and the only one I'm going to read, is, to be honest, only Trump supporters are going to Gateway Motorsports Park in St. Louis to watch IndyCar. And do you really want to be around people that act like Trump and Omarosa? Look at them and their pathetic whining and backstabbing each other. Now, I'm not talking any politics on this show, nor will we ever talk politics on this show. So I'm going to ignore the second half of that tweet for the most part. But to categorize all IndyCar fans as only Trump supporters is pretty insane, because I can name many that do not agree with his actions just based on viewing my social media on a daily basis. Two, you know, racing is racing. We should all be able to come together and enjoy or not enjoy a race because of the race, not because the person next to you in the stands or the person next to you on pit lane has a different political agenda or different political ideology, whatever. I'm so fired up. I'm stumbling over my words like normal. But that's what's really disappointing. And to their credit, Twitter really came together and pretty much agreed with me. Some people took their tweets a little too far, but that's pretty usual as per Twitter. But his subsequent tweets trying to defend what he said only made himself look like a bigger idiot. And, I don't even really know what else to say, but I loved everybody coming together and saying, listen, we're race fans first, and that's what's important when we're at the track. We're not, we're not there just to talk about politics in general, nor will I ever get into that discussion, especially on the episodes here, because we're here to talk about racing, and we're here to watch racing and talk about what we watched and talk about insanity seasons. So shame on you, Mark Bland. I am glad everybody pretty much fought back with you on Twitter, and I'll turn it over to you guys for any thoughts on that one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm guilty of tweeting politics maybe once a month, but I've learned my lesson because it just doesn't lead to anything good. And when I follow someone, a race fan on Twitter, I want their racing opinions or just something about their general lives. When they tweet about Donald Trump every hour, or 4 years ago when they tweeted about Barack Obama once an hour, it just gets annoying. And my political views are my views, but like I just don't agree with a lot of people's politics on the right side or the left side. And so it was cool to see everybody come together, and even some Trump supporters were just like, hey, you can't generalize that for everybody. And a lot of people were like, hey, man, you're just thinking of NASCAR. And like, that even is a generalization. Not every NASCAR fan is a Trump supporter. Or not every NASCAR fan is the stereotypical redneck that people like to think of. But
yep.
Yes, it was really cool to see Twitter come together and verbally put this guy down in a rational manner for the most part.
Yeah, I would say 80% of his replies were rational. I mean, obviously, we're always going to get some crazy people on Twitter, like Jenna Fryer. No, I had to throw that in there before we end the episode. But just really disappointing. I don't think it'll take away from the race. The Gateway PR team and Gateway management team, who loves the hashtag #NJFryWeTrust after today. So thank you for the support from them. Did a good job at squashing that one pretty quickly. And I saw some of at Mark Bland's tweets or replies to people were even deleted today. So, I'm glad that's over with.
This all started because he was bitter because he wasn't invited to the Grammar Hall Courtney Force media tour, which is kind of funny. Jess, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think he was actually allowed to go. He wasn't allowed to ask questions is kind of the way I read it. But seriously? maybe I just read it wrong.
Correct.
Okay. I thought so. So he obviously is salty because he wasn't allowed to ask Courtney his question to her. And so he had to take it out. And because, IndyCar is there before NHRA, he had to attack IndyCar, and maybe next weekend he'll attack NHRA too. But he's clearly just out for blood. I mean, he was clearly trying to attack the series and the fans. And when people started coming back, he got overly defensive and, to use the word in his own tweet, he was whining. But I think my biggest problem with it is he repeatedly called himself a media professional and then proceeded to use there, and there wrong, and also use two and two wrong. And I cannot deal with it. Just a little bit of grammar goes a long way. Just saying, just throwing it out there.
And, you know, I believe it was Gateway's PR representative, John Biskey, who's an incredibly friendly guy, said that if Mr. Bland had simply requested PR credentials for this event, he probably would have been granted them, but he never requested them. So he has nobody to blame for not being allowed to ask questions but himself.
Hey, good luck getting them now, punk.
Yeah, I think Arnie might have pointed that out too. I don't remember if it was Arnie or on the Gateway side, but shout out to the PR people who put that out there last night on social media. We'll just leave it at that.
We should print off 40,000 Make Gateway Great Again hats.
I think
just distribute Gateway.
If somebody wants to fund that for us, we'd be more than glad to help get it started. And with that, Jess, I think we can end the episode.
I think you're right. Do you have anything else?
No, yeah. I'm good to go.
No, green light, Jess, green light.
All right, sweet. And guys, keep your lug nuts tight.